to another exciting episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Burl Love, editor of the Enquirer, your host today, and back again. This is like third time in a row.
Yeah.
This might
permanent
be
permanent spot.
I think so. I think we should just make that announcement now. Casey Sloan, the new permanent co-host of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Yay, Casey. And also with us to kick things off is intrepid Enquirer reporter David Ferrara, who we're going to talk about your upcoming big-ass story. That's what we call them now. Mm-hmm. That's the official name for these projects, about flock cameras. Before we do that, I want to let everybody know that our special guest today during the guest segment will be Joe Rozzi, fourth-generation member of the Rozzi Famous Fireworks family. I think he's the vice president of the operation now. Mm-hmm. And then from iHeart Media, locally, you will know him as the program director of such wonderful stations as WEBN, Scott Reinhardt, to talk about the 50th anniversary of the Western and Southern WEBN fireworks. Have you been to the fireworks, Casey?
I haven't.
You have?
I've never been.
Casey!
I know. I don't know how it works out. I'm never here on Labor Day for some reason. Like, even in college, when I went to NKU, I just was not here.
What about you, David? You're a relatively newcomer to the area.
I knew it was a rite of passage moving to Cincinnati. I needed to check it out. And it was everything that people say it is.
It's supposed to be even more.
Yeah, even bigger.
Even bigger this year. So we will get all the details shortly. But before we do that, you've been working on not just our incremental coverage of all things flock cameras, but putting together kind of a step back, more investigative, records-oriented look at flock cameras. They are becoming big topics of concern in our community and across the country. But for those who have been, not paying attention, David, what is going on with these license plate reader cameras?
Yeah, so, you know, that's the technical term, right? A license plate reader camera, but a flock camera is sort of starting to become a household name. I mean, you go on social media and you will see swaths of people against these cameras. And the reason is that the flock network is a network of privately run license plate reader cameras that police departments have opted to install across the country that record license plates of cars going by. And what it does is it runs those license plates up against a hot list of wanted criminals, stolen vehicles, missing people to see, hey, you know what? Driving into Marymount is a stolen vehicle. Maybe we dispatch an officer and go see if we can recover that car and see if there's an arrest to be made. But also what it does, in addition to just running an active hot list, is it stores that data. And that data can be retrieved by not only the local police department, which had the camera that recorded the license plate, but also any other camera from any other department across the country.
So if they're using Flock's technology.
That's right.
Yeah. And people are starting to use Flock generically, but it is the name of a company, Flock Safety.
That's right.
But for good reason. I think they have a lion's share of the market right now.
They do. So we're working on this project that's going to be coming out this Sunday, the 23rd. And what we found by reaching out to every law enforcement agency across Cincinnati is that all but two that have license plate reader cameras, which does roughly make up a majority, a little bit more than a majority of all the police departments, of all departments that do have license plate reader cameras, they all use Flock. There's only two departments that don't use Flock that have these cameras, and they use another vendor called Verkada. So,
Verkada.
But they're similar in
Similar. The one difference between Verkada and Flock is Verkada doesn't have this vast network. And every police chief that I spoke with that I asked, hey, well, why did you choose Flock? It's because of the ability to cross share data, to access that network, and how the fact that it's so big has made it even bigger.
Now, license plate readers, intersection cameras, are not new. When I lived in the D.C. area, I think driving around Maryland, I must have been going a little too fast. I got a little citation in the mail with a fuzzy picture of my car and license plate. I think it was like a $35 fine. They tend to be cheaper than if an officer pulls you over. But what makes these different than the ones that people might be familiar with it. They still hate, but where does the kind of big brother concerns come in?
Sure. Well, I can happily say that at least it's somebody that occasionally might go a few miles over the speed limit there. Right now, they don't do any traffic enforcement. So they don't have any AI built in. They do detect vehicle make and model and extract that in. But where the big brother aspect comes in is what people are describing as this pattern of life that it establishes. If you leave your home and you commute to work on a major thoroughfare and go through multiple towns or on a highway and pass by multiple traffic lights, you might pass by a dozen, two dozen flock cameras every day on the way to work. When you go to the grocery store, when you go to the park, when you're spending time with relatives, and because your license plate is effectively attached to you and your person, with a lot of people kind of owning their own car, especially like in two partner relationships, stuff like that, it's possible to be able to say, hey, we know exactly where you were at this time, at this place every day for an incredible amount of time. And police departments have a retention policy on this data. And that's one of the things that Flock has been talking a lot about lately. They restrict it to 30 days by default, but agencies can set their own retention period. And what we've found in our investigation is that different agencies across Cincinnati have different retention periods. Some keep it at 30 days, some have no max limit. So how long the data exists, how long it's stored for, it's pretty nebulous. It's varies from department to department. And more information is just coming out about how expansive this is as more reporting and questions are being asked.
Well, often when we do these step back pieces, it's because there have been instances where people either have been protesting, speaking out, which is what happened in Newport. Mm-hmm. Cases of abusing the technology or overreach, like what happened in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And then even interesting, like what I would call frontier justice kind of things happening, where I believe in Claremont County, a man was arrested because he just decided to take one out.
Right. And that's,
and by the way, he was arrested because another camera caught him in the act. So
that's right.
The irony.
And really, that's the thing, is that there's been such pushback from people that are concerned about the big brother, you know, heavy government surveillance aspect of this, that people have launched online campaigns. There's a website that exists called Have I Been Flocked? And by using public records requests to departments across the country, people have, just in the community, built this database of audit logs that have license plates of cars that were in the Flock database. And you can search up your plate and see if a search was run against you. Now, departments have grown wise to this. Recently, in this past cycle of the Ohio legislature, an amendment was added to an appropriations bill that restricted what data can be provided under Public Records Act. So we encountered a lot of resistance from departments requesting audit logs and other records because the fact that images and data associated with a license plate reader system are now exempt. And that's in response to a lot of these records requests and community action toward getting this data out there and in front of people.
All right. Well, if you're interested in this, and a lot of people are, because every time we write about flock cameras in particular, a lot of people click, a lot of people want to read it. So we're, as we are wont to do, adding context, you know, adding data. What I think is interesting is a similar concern happened when cell phone technology geolocation became so prevalent. But as it turned out, that type of information still, like if someone is suspecting someone of a crime, you have to have a search warrant to get that geolocation data tied to your phone. Like a judge has to be involved. Right now, because the Flock technology is kind of out, so far out in front of our, you know, regulations and our laws, it's sort of like the wild, wild west when it comes to how this data is being used.
That's right. And, you know, with license plate readers in the past, right, a lot of, you know, police experts and activists that we spoke with within police departments have said that, well, you know, it's no different than cops just scanning your plate, driving along the road, or having cops posted everywhere. And, you know, you don't need a search warrant for that right now. If you're driving in front of an officer,
yeah, there's no expectation that if I'm driving down the street on a public road that I have privacy.
That's right. But the difference is how these license plate readers are fixed in so many locations, and in a lot of ways you cannot get past them, in the sense that, you know, you're always going to have your license plate tagged and recorded and run into a database despite never being even accused of a crime.
All right. Well, if you're interested, it'll be online and in print Sunday as we record this. It's a cloudy Wednesday day in the Queen City.
Not raining, though.
Not raining. We have knock on wood, Phil. we have enough precipitation for the month, I believe.
Yeah.
For the whole summer, I think. Yes. So, all right. Well, David, I'm sure we all look forward to reading that. Again, you'll find it online and in print Sunday in the choir, in the Cincinnati Enquirer. So thank you, David. And I think now we will shift gears and talk about fireworks. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And as promised, we have two very special guests. First, we have Scott Reinhardt, who is the Senior VP of Programming at iHeartRadio. You might know him better as the master behind the mayhem at such wonderful stations as WEBN and others, which leads us to our second guest today, Joe Rossi. We don't even need to introduce you. Everybody knows the Rossi family, but Joe is fourth generation with Rossi's famous fireworks, who creates the magic for the Western and Southern WEBN fireworks. I still want to say Toyota. I mean, it's like ingrained in my head, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's going but, back.
Go back to Beautiful, too.
I mean, yeah.
It took our talent a while, too, just to make the switch.
I bet. Tough. Yeah. Lots of Toyota. Yes. So, yeah, 50 years of the fireworks. I think, you know, we want to get into a lot of things today, but I think what people are most interested in is, how are you going to surpass what you've already done, what you've already accomplished with these fireworks, to meet the moment of 50 years? We'll start with you, Joe. I mean,
every year we say it was bigger and better, right? Mm-hmm. This year,
this year too,
really bigger,
really bigger. Like we mean it this time.
there's significant changes. It's expanded to two sets of barges for a total of six. So as we were looking at our site maps, we're about 1,200 feet wide of a fireworks site. We added a couple of buildings, a couple of rooftops. So the idea is to kind of immerse you in this fireworks show. Both bridges naturally, but we're moving to the tops of both bridges with a bunch of effects, which we haven't done on one of them ever. Purple Bridge Crown, we had done a long time ago, but we've really expanded that. Show's 10 minutes longer. Mm-hmm. And the last 15 seconds are going to be the most memorable amount of noise. Thanks, Katie Walters. It's going to be epic. I mean, we were looking at it as we were scripting, because now we get to use visualization software. And oh boy, would we do. I mean, it's big.
How long have you been using visualization software?
You know, it really came on about 7 or 8 years ago, okay. And it really improved. Because this year, for the first time, and we had to do it, we had to design the show in 3D. Because we just couldn't get the entire footprint on a screen. So we kind of had to move around views to select locations to drop product in. Otherwise, you just look at this one frame.
When you say drop product, you're talking about fireworks.
Fireworks. Yeah. 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 All the
well, we're in a different podcast.
It's easy because now you could just click on stuff, right? I can click on all these positions. But in order to be able to do that, we had to move the screen around. So we had to do it to 3D, and it really came off pretty well. So,
help me understand the positioning of the six barges now. So this is the first time you've had six?
We did a long time ago.
Okay.
A long time ago. There used to be what we called, it was an upriver tow, right? Used to be upriver of the Purple Bridge, right? Between that and the Big Mac. Well, over the years, the trees grew up at Sawyer Point, and it just became a little bit more difficult. It wasn't great. So we ended up saying, let's just put it all in between the two bridges, which made for a nice frame. But this year, we've added a downriver tow of the Taylor Southgate Bridge. So basically in front of the ballpark.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it'll be tight on that bridge. So now you've got both of these sets of barges with the Taylor Southgate in the middle, which creates its own position. And it really changed the entire look of the show. So we still have the regular set where it normally is between the Serpentine Wall or at the Serpentine Wall, but now we have this downriver. And one of the other reasons why we had to do this, did I mention how big this thing was?
I think so, yeah.
I realized have pretty quickly that we're not going to have enough room on just these three decks to actually, if we had to do that, we're not going to have enough space. So, I mean, there's certain regulations we have to abide by as far as spacing, and we weren't going to have enough. So it wasn't just to make it bigger. It was because, wow, we're not going to fit everything. So
okay.
That was one of the other reasons.
Covington's much happier, and so are the banks.
Yes.
So.
Because there's more viewing areas.
They'll have a whole set of barges in front of them now.
Yeah. So. You open up all that area down towards Smale, and it spreads the whole thing out.
Because it is a time-honored tradition to debate where is the best spot to watch. But sounds like you're adding...
You guys are looking at me. I'm down on that barge.
you've never really experienced it as a,
I'll
as
tell
a
you this.
Spectator.
When we design this show, we're designing it from the Kentucky side of the river, looking at Ohio.
Ah.
So I don't...
I thought that was top secret.
I don't think it'll... Well, we have to look at it from some perspective.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, we're able to put the city skyline in the background of the visualization software so we can actually see some of the things. But then I've got this building behind me that we have to turn around and look at. But that's kind of how we do it. Now, is that the best place to watch from? Maybe. I think both sides of the river are going to be the best place. I think it doesn't matter where you are. I think
the best place to watch is where you are, mm-hmm. No matter where you go.
Well, some people would debate that the best place is on TV.
Yeah. I disagree. I mean,
you can't feel it.
Your body doesn't like absorb the. Yeah.
You're not in the atmosphere of it with the crowd either.
Right.
And the colors and mm-hmm. it's just the
smell and then and literally you'll feel it. You'll feel it more than you have in the past.
So, Scott, one of the things that makes this so special and part of Cincinnati lore is the tie-in to WEBN because you guys do the soundtrack. Some people, the soundtrack is just as anticipated mm-hmm. as the fireworks themselves. So no pressure, but...
No pressure.
What are you guys doing different or bigger or... That you can share with us.
Okay, I can share a little bit. Obviously, the show's longer, so that was a challenge because it's usually 30 minutes when we stretch it out towards the 40 mark. So that's always a challenge. But with this one, sort of how we approached it was, it's the 50th. Let's take a look back. So what I actually did is went back and tracked down a lot of the old soundtracks. They weren't very good at archiving back in the day, but I did find a bunch of different soundtracks, and we've listened to them and went through them and kind of like identified not only our favorite songs, but the favorite part of the show, of each show. So,
okay.
Because it's just not a song. It also has to work well with fireworks. So
mm-hmm. Right.
That's part of the strategy.
Yeah, it is. It's not just, here's some music in the background. You guys are integrating music to the fireworks themselves. So.
Yeah, we're trying to envision it like it's art meets science in a weird way. There's mm-hmm. a scientific approach to it. Some of the, you got to have high, low, clear the sky out a little bit, go this way, go that way, but also have the music to match that as Joe does his little vision there. So
okay,
so it's just different. It was a lot of pressure because you're like there's 49 other soundtracks you're looking at.
Yeah.
So then I tried to identify, two or three or four of each song. And then from there was a battle and just trying to make it all fit together and weave together.
Has the soundtrack evolved over the years? It seems to me like back when I went, when I was in college, when you could drag coolers and people set blankets out and everything like that. It seemed like it was, it was rock. It was like EBN rock, right? But it seems like you guys, with classical.
Yes.
Because, I guess that's a Frank Wood.
Yes. The station's roots are in classical music. So. Yeah.
So mixing classic rock and classic music. But over the years, how could you not have incorporated Let It Go when that was a pop? So it's also kind of capturing the zeitgeist of the moment at times.
Yeah, a lot of soundtracks are a time capsule in a weird way for that year. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was big, a big movie, a big song. And sometimes even if it's kind of a cheesy song, from our perspective, we'll play a little bit and then just kind of yank it off and have fun with it.
Right.
We've done that with Britney Spears and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
But it's become bigger than just EBN at this point. The show's for a whole... city and multiple cities. So it's like you just got to be a little bit more broad, and we try to make it as family friendly as possible as well. So that's been kind of the idea behind it. But I will say, you know, people's attention spans are a lot shorter now, so the songs are a little bit quicker than they used to be. We used to be able to go for like 3, 4, 5 minutes song and only have to pick like, hey, let's just pick 10 songs. We're
right.
done.
Yeah.
Now with people's, the way they view things and their patience, and just, we got to keep it moving now. So there's a lot of twists and turns.
Now, I'm sure Smoke on the Water will be incorporated.
Well, Smoke and Water is traditionally, we always play that right before we start Crowd Wars. That's sort of the song we play. Gotcha. To get everybody fired up, and then we cut that
hey,
off.
Hey, Covington, first. Let's
yeah.
hear you.
Let's go. Yeah,
who's leading the crowd?
Well, we're working on that. There's going to hopefully be one big surprise.
So, oh, yeah. Oh, see, we love when our guests break news here.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be Eddie Fingers.
It could be. Could not be.
So, I mean, he's be probably done it more than anybody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there could be a little surprise in there. So.
The original Dawn Patrol, maybe?
Possibly.
Ah, I'm on to it. It's going to be Robin and Eddie. I know it. Bill, look in the eye. Is it Robin and Eddie?
It may be one or two of those, yeah.
Okay.
I can't narrow it down for you. But yeah, we actually are bringing back a lot of older talent. We're calling it the Legacy Lounge, the Lunatic Legacy Lounge. So we're like going to have a bunch of old talent back to
kind
of greet the fans and also be on air with us as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. You like how I dug that out, Casey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
And,
this is why you do what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Casey's then probably thinking, who's Robin Wood? I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I have no idea.
She's got nothing.
Well, I want to also touch on the legacy of the Razzies. Joe, if you don't mind. So you're fourth generation?
Fourth generation,
talk a little bit about how Razzies came to be.
Oh, boy. So my great-grandfather emigrated here right at the turn of the 20th century, right? And he came from a region in Italy known for fireworks. That's what he did. So my grandfather was born in 1895, and that's pretty much why we say since 1895. But we think it's older than that. Settled in a little town up in northwest Pennsylvania called Newcastle, which for some reason was a hotbed for Italian fireworks makers. And he had a place there. Sometime around the 20s, we started shooting fireworks at Coney Island, and my grandfather decided he wanted to go off on his own, so he moved down here, settled and bought a little piece of property in Loveland, started manufacturing. We were there till 2010. Over the years, my father took over, and then my brother was running the company, and then things changed right around 2010, 2011. Sister Nancy's the president. And we'll see what happens in the coming few years. But in a nutshell, that's kind of how it happened. And came down here because there was a source of powder at King Powder Company, which we used to buy our black powder from. And we've been here ever since. We still have a presence in Loveland. But our main facility is up in Wilmington right now because Loveland grew up around us.
Sure.
Like lots of towns around Cincinnati, so we couldn't grow, so we just kind of had to move. And that piece of property is now a park, and it's called Home of the Brave Park. Still stop by there once in a while. There's one building that they left standing on the property that once in a while I'll pull in there, because I grew up there. Yeah. All of us grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of nostalgia there.
So obviously you do more than the WEBN fireworks. Mm-hmm. You're manufacturing at that facility?
We are not manufacturing right now. We make a few things a few things. But, you know, manufacturing in the United States is pretty much extinct.
Really?
For fireworks, yeah. Regulation and overseas imports is pretty much what finished it off. So we do have a partner in Italy that makes product for us. We bring in some products from Japan once in a while, and a lot of product from China.
I'm guessing for this show, you're sourcing from all of them, right?
Maybe. We'll see.
Look him in the eye, Joe. We'll see. Look him in the eye.
No, don't look him in the eye. No.
So that's, I guess, one big way the industry has changed for the Razzie family. So now you're importing, but I guess the the expertise in staging a show, and you were talking earlier about the technology. Just in your experience with the company, what are some of those big changes and how have...
Show design and execution. I mean, back when we started, it was, if I remember the first year, now I was only 10 the first year, but I think it was shoot fireworks and play music. And then it evolved into recorded soundtrack, and we used to shoot on a voice cue, right? So we'd record someone would look at a stopwatch and record cues, standby cue one, fire. And we'd have a panel with 100 or 200 buttons that we would push buttons. Then digital firing came along, and designing a show became a little bit more easier to do. It was basically laying out commands in a spreadsheet. You know, here's what the description of the item, this is what I want it to do, or this is where it's coming from. And there'd be lines and lines and lines of that. And it was all digitally fired. Then digital firing advanced to become more precise. And then visualization software came along, which was kind of crude in the beginning, but it kind of made it easier for us to see what we did. Before that, we didn't know if it was going to work or not. Mm-hmm. This looks good. And based on our knowledge, okay, it worked. Now we actually get to play it back. And now visualization software has progressed to where we could design in three dimensions. So in which I had said with this show, we had to do. Digital firing has not changed a whole lot because it does what it needs to do. But the firing systems that we use are probably one of the best on the market as far as we're concerned. It's robust. It's bulletproof. It's simple. It's very, very simple. And it's won us awards. So, you know, there's some things that you just don't fix because they work so well. But that's basically how it's evolved to where we can actually watch the show. We can fire up to, you know, 10th of a second timing or less, for multiple locations. And a few years ago, this show used to be fired on a time code track, right? So a station would broadcast, part of that soundtrack was a time code track. Just a digital clock, digital tone, that was it. Now we're firing on GPS. So we can coordinate all of these different locations without having to receive a signal. They're operating on the same clock the radio station is, as the television station is, as we are. So everything is just basically independent of one another, but talking to a few satellites.
So because of all that technology, I'm going to ask a very, like, probably dumb question, but sometimes I'm known for that. No stopwatches. Is it down to the fact, to the point where you have it all programmed in and somebody hits one button and you just sit back and it does all?
Yes.
It just runs the whole thing. There's not people running up and down the barges with torches.
No, we all have to hit one button at the same time. That's what it is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, basically once we run down, we set the system time. And once we fire up our system, it's basically a countdown clock. And once we all arm at 9:11?
9:14, 9:15 this year, so.
The drone show's longer. Show starts.
Mm-hmm. The what's longer?
The drone show's going to be longer.
Oh, the drone show. Yeah, the drone show. Mm-hmm. My gosh, yeah. You know, I like drone shows, but
it's not the same.
It's just not the same.
Yeah, but they are just cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we.
So what keeps you, Joe? What keeps you up at night then? If the technology, like,
how long do you say this podcast is?
What keeps you up at night?
And reflect back too. Were there any memorable Phil, you know, beep warming, oh shit moments where, you know, as the show was about to happen, something.
Yeah. Oh, there have been a few. There have been a few over the years. What keeps us up at night? See, don't get me wrong. Technology's great, right? Digital firing systems are great.
When it works. Yeah.
It's a computer. I'll tell you this one little story. This is probably 15 years ago or more, or maybe even 20. Our crew on Whitebridge was having – Whitebridge is Taylor Southgate. That's the designation we give it. Was having trouble with communications with his network. All right? This is my buddy Jim Witterstetter. And when Jim's doing something, he doesn't answer his radio. So all I remember is he was having a comms problem. We were in crowd wars. We couldn't stop this thing. All I did was I turned around and looked at that bridge. And as soon as it started shooting, I was like, he got it. He had to replace a couple of trunk lines, which on a 500-foot span of that bridge doesn't happen that easy, but he got it done. There's a one year a storm came in around 8:30. It was bad. It was really bad. And we were out. We were already in position. And luckily it came through and it moved out and we were good. So I guess the things that keep me up at night are we gonna have good weather? Mm-hmm. Our firing systems, because I'm not physically touching something, I still have that issue.
Yeah.
Our firing systems going to perform, and it does. And that everything fires safely. And that we all make it out of there. Because you know, fireworks are dangerous.
Mm-hmm. How many crew members do you have on a typical fireworks night?
For this event?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. So in a normal year, there's about 30. This year, they'll probably be close to 60 by the time it's all said and done. We're actually starting on August 28th, which is the Friday a week before. We usually start on the Tuesday before the show. So I'll have a crew of about 15 people the entire week loading in barges. Then bridges come in on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. A couple of rooftops will be Saturday, Sunday. So the crew will balloon to about 60 on Sunday.
And these barges, these are barge companies that you contract with, so they bring their own crew as well?
Yeah, C&B Marine handles all of the
okay.
The barge rental, the tug, the movements. And they've been doing it since we started this. Back then it was Carlisle. But they've been a partner and they've got the property, which interestingly, I think one of the reasons this thing's so successful is doing barge shows is a little more difficult because it's not built for people just to walk on, right? Their docks where they tie up, it's not set up for that because that's not typically what happens. But they just happen to have a piece of property downriver that has this, I'll call it a dock. It's basically a steel wall that kind of sticks out in the river. And when the river's at pool stage, you can walk right on. So I could back a truck up to it. Otherwise, we're craning things on and we're, you know, mm-hmm. logistics is a lot more complicated. But we've been going down there since it started. And it's interesting because when the news wants to come down and talk to us, hey, send me the address. Doesn't have an address.
Get on your boat.
It doesn't have an address. I'll give you directions. And it's not a secret place or anything like that. It's just, it's not where you would expect anybody just to go.
So, and that's where you stage everything?
That's a reloading. Yeah, that's a
restage. So in terms of the bulk, like, can you measure it in truckloads or how do you give me an idea how much product to use your how much product are we dealing with here?
A kilo or two.
Oh gosh. You know, if I want to say I think if I remember the number is north of 16,000 items. And some of those items have multiple shots anywhere between 20 and 100. So you could say by the time it's all said and done, there's 80,000-90,000 things happening. It's like I said, it's a lot. It's so two tractor trailers, just in equipment alone, just in our mortar racks.
Okay.
And then two other truckloads of the fireworks come down and all of the ancillary equipment we need. That's just the barges. And then, you know, Taylor Southgate will have its own two or three trucks and Purple will have its own. Purple Bridge will have its own.
Now, are all those mortar racks loaded one time or during the 40 minutes do you have crew but running around?
All preloaded.
All preloaded.
Yeah, it's all preloaded.
So no one's running around
imagining
like a 1950s war movie where guys are like running out of loading these mortar racks and putting their this is great podcasting because I'm doing these gestures but mm-hmm. like putting their hands over their ears as the rocket launches and reloading. It's all preloaded.
Every item carries an address and is plugged into a basically a network hub.
That's amazing. So what percentage of all of this ends up being duds? Because even not when much. I go to Razzie's or somewhere and buy some fireworks, there's always a dud, right? Like, do you have any idea how many?
Not much. I think last year after the show was done, we maybe had 20, 25 items left.
Wow.
You know, it's a violent environment. So sometimes mm-hmm. What we call an electric match wire will get pulled loose. Mm-hmm. Or we spend the better part of a day or two. One of the reasons we have all the sand out there isn't just for ballast for certain things, but we cover up every wire and cable with sand. Because when you're in a normal, like in a field somewhere, you can spread things out. We don't have that luxury here. So everything is really confined. So we cover everything up with sand. And once in a while, a wire burns. You know, very rarely do you have anything other than that. So that's why we spend a lot of time loading and securing and double checking and make sure everything is protected under plastic for the duration that it's there, so that things don't get wet or damp. Or
how many days does it take to set it up?
Or this one's going to take about 10.
Wow.
About 10 days.
I do want to know, how long is your guys' like planning process for the event itself, especially with the soundtrack, like planning that out to go with the fireworks?
Yeah, well, I mean, it starts, I mean, as soon as we're done, take yeah. a week for or the two next off. Year. I do on my end.
We talk about, you know, what worked, what looked good, what didn't, you know, what can we change for next year? I mean, this one, we started talking about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
At 48, and we're like, okay, this is coming. What are we doing? And then we started planning certain things last summer because everything was more. I mean, we got to find 3 more barges. We got to, mm-hmm. you know, what are we going to do on these rooftops? And then we, so full-on design and stuff happens as soon as we get the soundtrack. And most of the time, the soundtrack came in like, you know, after the 4th of July.
This year, not so
this
much.
Year was end of May.
Like we had up the end you of needed May. It.
Yeah.
We needed it.
Did you meet your deadline, Scott?
I did. Thank you.
So who?
He did. Totally.
Do you have one guy that's the soundtrack guru?
We do.
Yeah. Who is that?
He goes by the name Miles.
Miles?
Yeah, he's a producer out in LA for a long time now. I believe he lives in Cleveland now. So, but Miles does, that's who I work with on the soundtrack. But he physically puts it together. I just help direct and choose and rearrange and
like a,
critique
like,
them.
Like
know?
A good VP.
Like a good VP.
Yeah, I'm here to help.
Exactly.
Are there any other memorable moments the two of you can share looking back at your involvement with the fireworks? How many years have you been involved, Scott?
This is number 32 or 33. I can't even keep track.
You don't even look like you're 32 years old.
Isn't it great?
You're well preserved.
Well,
yeah.
I started when I was 10.
Okay.
I can't. Nothing. There's so many stories. Most of them you just can't tell. You know.
Well, tell one of those. We have a mature audience here. We're adults.
Now, I will say that one of the most memorable for fans is when Sam Kinison did the Crowd Wars.
That I remember that.
We actually have been doing these fireworks flashbacks, and that's been one of them. Him screaming and saying, "Cincinnati, let's go party!"
Yeah.
So that's always
Casey, do you know who Sam Kinison is? Mm-mm. I knew it, no, man. This no. is why she's here. To,
I know.
She's
to
watch Back to School or something. I
mean. Right, yeah. What about you, Joe?
Oh, gosh. There's quite a few. I mean, if you go back to the 80s one. So I started doing this for our company in around 89, 1990. So I've been down there ever since. So one thing I'll point out is Scott and I are the last two standing. Everybody else is moved on or retired or something
died.
Else. maybe that too. But we brought in some large shells from Japan back in, I think it was 86. Right? These were 16 inch back. You could do that kind of stuff back then. And they were supposed to be top notch, beautiful. Shot one on down here. And it came 6 feet out of the pipe and opened.
Oh, no.
Instead of 600 feet. And somebody caught a picture of it. And it made it on the Cincinnati Bell phone book 1 year.
I bet it looked good.
I was on.
Like
on
a firework, what, like right at the Daniel Carter Beer Bridge, like at that level?
No. lower than
lower
that.
Below the bridge.
Its mortar was about 4 or 5 feet tall. Oh, it came about 6 feet out and opened.
So it didn't launch.
And it went from one side of the river to the other. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden I see all these stars coming by me, and everybody else is down on the ground. I'm like, oh crap. hope nobody got hurt. And luckily, nobody. So that was the last time we did that.
You did lose an eyebrow or two. Right?
We lost something.
a little singeing of the beard.
But I think I was probably 19 or 20 at the time when that happened.
I'll shake it off. You're fine.
I started taking over the setup down here in probably 1990. So just over the years, there have just been a lot of things that go on. Back in 2005, we participate in these competitions in Montreal. And we have been going there every so many years for a long time. And we were invited back for an award. And the crew up there, they're all French-speaking Canadians, very nice people. They have a luncheon. And it's not just like sandwiches. It's pasta. It's all Italian luncheon. And I thought, you know, this is kind of neat. So that year, I was talking to my sisters. We decided to do the same thing the night before, like Saturday night. And basically, my sisters cook. And the crew, whoever wants to come back for it, it's just a nice meal. We've been doing that since 2005. There's always some memories that come out of that. Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Like most families.
It's really, over the years, it's something we look forward to. Our family looks forward to it. Our employees, our display operators, because a lot of our display operators that work on the show, the majority of them are part-time with us. And it's always kind of the end of the season. And it's the last time we all get to work together, for the most part. A lot of these people I won't see till next spring. So we try to make it an enjoyable time standing on a probably 120-degree steel deck full of sand and bees. And, and you know, you're using a portalet for a week. And it's not a very nice environment, but everybody seems to come back and they enjoy work.
Sounds like Burning Man or something.
Well, there's an accident, it is.
That's true.
All right. Well, if you have been living under a rock, the 2026 Western and Southern WEBN fireworks are Sunday, September 6th. And now we know, like, if you don't want to get down here early and you don't want to miss it, you are launching around
9:14
or 15.
Haven't done all the math yet.
Okay. Was there anything else that we didn't ask that people need to know about this?
I mean, it's
the 50th anniversary of these fireworks.
I mean, this came about, and in my opinion, it's because of this team that we all have here with iHeart and Western and Southern, you know, the production staff at EBN. Well, staff, should I say staff?
You can say staff. I wouldn't make it too plural. But.
But none of this would happen without all of that. And I think Mr. Barrett has been one of the greatest supporters of this.
Talk about that. How important is the title sponsor? I mean, that's who's writing the check, correct?
Correct.
So it sounds like it's going to be a big check this year. Can you ballpark? Can you ballpark how much John Barrett's going to have to pull
Mr.
out
Barrett's
of his wallet?
A very good man.
He's a very generous man too, and he absolutely loves this event, and he loves the city, and he loves giving back to it, and he has been an absolute great to work with, and I've had the pleasure of having lunch with him or meeting him for a conference. He'd like me to come in and talk about fireworks, okay? So we talk about fireworks for about 5 minutes, and we talk about politics for an hour. Very personable guy. It's great.
Oh, yeah. He's been a guest on our podcast. All right. Well, there you have it. Now everybody knows the behind the scenes. Well, kind of. You guys are tight-lipped on a few things. But so I'm guessing no 16...
That I can promise you no.
Mortars from Japan this year. All right.
That's the only thing I can say no to.
All right. Well, Joe Rossi, Scott Reinhart, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, I'm psyched to go to the fireworks now, as if I wasn't. And I Casey, I can't believe you have not been.
I know. And I can't go this year either.
What?
I'm going to be on my honeymoon.
Oh, well, congratulations. Another studio round of
another
applause.
Another one, yeah. Fantastic.
Yes. So that's why we kept David for the last segment, because I'm curious to know. So I, you know, grew up here, been to the fireworks several times. But I'm curious, as a newcomer to town, as a, you know, first timer at the fireworks, what was your experience like?
Well, I think the river makes a great setting for it. So just coming to town, I mean, it was packed. I do remember walking down here, and thankfully I didn't have to worry about parking or anything like that, because I live in the urban core here. But
that's good. I have a story about that.
Mm-hmm. But the riverfront, I mean, just viewing it over the river, I think is the best view. And the bridges in the background. Probably Kentucky, though, is probably the best angle to see it from, because then you have Cincinnati in the background.
I was going to ask where you sat to watch it.
See, I was on the Ohio side, and I think This year I'm going to try and go on the Kentucky side.
Yeah.
Well, we learned from Joe Rossi that's sort of by design.
Yeah. He said when they're designing it, they look at it from the Kentucky side.
Not that there's a bad view.
No,
but
no. Especially this. It's going to be 360. Totally immersive.
Hmm. So pro tip, if you can walk down here or take public transportation, there is nowhere to park mm-hmm. on a good year. And now with all the construction tied to Brent Spence Bridge, there's even less opportunity to park close down here. I learned the hard way in college that you really can't park too close to an intersection, because that's what my buddy did when I was in college. We couldn't find anywhere to park on the Ohio side. We were coming down from Clifton, and we ended up somewhere in I think, Covington. And he parked. Oh, there's a good place. But it was, you know, it was 10 feet from it, whatever the rule is. And got towed. Oh. And so we, you know, we might have been partying a little bit. We stumbled back across the river. And I don't know if you remember that movie, Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, yes.
totally what we were like. Dude, where's my car? And I was telling Casey earlier, like, you know, we're college kids, probably 19 or 20. And we didn't know what to do. And one of my friends was like, well, I guess I could call my mom. And I was like, dude, we are 20 years old. No one's calling their mom. We ended up getting somebody's girlfriend to pick us up, and it was like a night not to remember. But one year, I was really excited because I had just moved back to Cincinnati, and I got invited to a special viewing area that was right underneath the suspension bridge. Oh. And I don't know if most people realize, but under the bridge itself, there's like this area where you can host a party. Like there's this big room kind of thing. Hmm. And so imagine the tower of the suspension bridge, that old big stone support structure. You can actually go in the bottom of it. And so they had like a band in there and like food and stuff. And they had all these chairs set up in the kind of grassy area right by the suspension bridge. Mm. And I thought, well, this is awesome. This is like the best view I've ever had. And so the fireworks start, and it was one of those hot, hazy, muggy nights. And the smoke from the first round of fireworks kind of like floated right on top of us and sat there and didn't move. We were like literally in a smoke cloud, and I didn't see any of the fireworks. I mean, some of it you could kind of see when they lit the bridge up, you could kind of see, but it was like the biggest wah-wah fireworks moment I've ever had. And he mentioned that, like, they kind of factor that in, like, when they put the show together, they put little breaks in just mm-hmm. to let the sky clear a little bit, because there's just so – we learned, David, you weren't in for the interview with our guests, but they have roughly – they are planning roughly 16,000 individual items of fireworks.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And many of them have multiple blasts associated with them. So
yeah,
it's going to be a big show this year.
90,000 pops.
Yeah. 80,000 to 90,000 explosions.
And they fire them out from barges out on the river?
Barges, mm-hmm. yes. Wow. Yep. Barges off of bridges.
Yep.
Anywhere they can.
Off of the rooftops now too this year.
Wow.
Off the bridges.
And so you are going to be on your honeymoon and miss the 50th anniversary of the fireworks.
Maybe I'll live stream it.
Oh, that's good. All right. Well, thank you, David.
Thank you, Casey.
Are we ready to wrap this up?
Yep, let's do it.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, the intrepid Phil Didion, Frank Zappa, and the Mothers were at the best place around.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, like the kind David Ferrara does, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is the time. Just go to our website and click on the subscribe button to find a special offer just for you. But some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground.
Thanks again, and see you next week.